explique un aspect.
Thank you very much. Well, first I want to thank the organizers for giving me an opportunity to present these results in front of Phil Anderson. And this is a subject in which I entered only recently. And so I will first tell you how I came to this subject and how I understand it, which is certainly a much more naive way of doing it than all these talks that we have heard in the previous hours. And and then I will tell you why I think that cold atoms in disorder, in optical disorder potential, is a very good system. And then I will not avoid the question of what's the point of talking about one-dimensional Anderson localization. And then I will show you the experimental results. Okay, let us start. Of course, this everybody knows, that the original model of Anderson localization is based on the tight binding model. But the tight binding model is not a model familiar to people like me, coming from waves, from optics, okay? And so I have a different understanding of Anderson localization. And the understanding is the following. In analogy to an ideal crystal, I think about waves propagating in a perfectly homogeneous medium. And then, if I have some randomness, I think about random scatterers and scattering small wavelets. And the way I understand Anderson localization is that when the scatter wavelets are strong enough, then at some point there is a destructive interference forbidding canceling any forward propagation. And if it prevents any forward propagation, it prevents propagation in any direction, because when you try to propagate, you try to propagate forward. Well, that's my naive view. And the important points that I think I understood from the beginning is that Anderson localization is definitely about a single particle. It's a quantum effect, if we call wave effect a quantum effect, but for electrons it's certainly a quantum effect. And we need to have interference of many wavelets, and this is what leads to localization. And well, I will skip this transparency because it was wonderfully presented by Moti. There have been many experiments for observing Anderson localization with light. And 10 years ago, there were really very hot discussions between the people, because one obvious problem is, how are you sure that what you observe is not ordinary absorption? So you must be sure that the medium is not absorbing. And there is a whole range of hot discussions between these people. But now we know that Anderson localization has been observed with light. But anyway, I'm going to try to convince you that cold atoms is a real wonderful system. What are the good features? Nowadays, with all the advances in experimental techniques, we can really have situations where we have cold atoms in 3D, in 2D, in a well-localized in a sheet, and in 1D, well-localized in a tube. And we all know, of course, that Anderson localization, the question of dimensionality for Anderson localization is extremely important. And so we can address question in 3D, 2D, 1D. We can change the de Broglie wavelength of our atoms over many orders of magnitude. And this is remarkable. Just by changing the temperature of our ultra-cold atoms, we can change the wavelengths by many, many order of magnitude. For instance, typically from 1 nanometer to 10 micrometer, maybe even more. The most important point, well, a very important point, I will show it next transparency, is that we can have a pure potential. We are sure there is no thing equivalent to absorption. It's a purely conservative problem. And last and not least, we have many observation tools that many more observation tools than people in condensed matter. For instance, I'm proud I am going to be able to show you a photograph of a wave function directly with cold atoms. Of course, with cold atoms, we know that there is a new feature, which is the fact that there are interactions between atoms. If we think of pure Anderson localization, which is a single particle effect, it's a hindrance. But of course, it leads us to a very interesting problem, because now with cold atoms, we can control the interaction. And so at some stage, we are going to be able to add interaction and to look how Anderson localization evolves with changing the level, with adding interactions. Okay, so what is the disorder we produce? Well, first, what is the potential to which the atoms are submitted? To make a long story short, we use what we call the dipole potential. The idea is very simple. I have an electromagnetic field. The electric field polarizes the atom, and the induced dipole in the atom couples to the electric field. So you have a term which is proportional to the square of the electric field, that is to say to light intensity. And if you are far from any resonance, the polarizability is a real number. So you have a mechanical potential which is proportional to light intensity. If you are on one side of resonance, it's attractive towards large intensity. If you are on the other side of resonance, you are repelled from large intensity. So here, what we make is a random distribution of light intensity. And the way we do it is by using a speckle, multi-presented speckle. And we make here, it's a standard speckle. We have a laser beam passing through a ground glass plate. And then we have this pattern. And what I like very much in speckle is that it is a very well-controlled disorder. And the reason is very simple. I'm not a theorist, but I understand the reason. What you have here, think of the electric field that you have here. It results from the addition of many contributions here with random phases and similar amplitude, which means that you have a sum of many equivalent random variables, so we can safely use the central limit theorem. And as soon as we can use the central limit theorem, we know that we have a Gaussian random process. So the electric field complex amplitude that we have here, it's a random Gaussian process. And so we can calculate, for instance, any momentum. And the intensity, which is a second order momentum, can be expressed. And you can express the autocorrelation function of the intensity, which is fourth order in electric field, which means that you can express it with a moment theorem for Gaussian process. And this has been checked very often. The second point is that we not only know the distribution of the amplitude of the intensity, that is to say of the disorder, but we can also very well control the spatial autocorrelation function of this disorder, because it only depends on the diffraction properties that we have here. And for instance, the radius of the correlation here, so the size of the autocorrelation function, only depends on the aperture that you have here. And this, again, has been verified by many experiments. Okay, now, the difficult question. Is there anything interesting with one-dimensional Anderson localization? Of course, I know that theorists tell us all states are localized in one dimension. But for an experimentalist, we can raise a different question. Can we observe in 1D something looking like Anderson localization? And what do I mean? I mean that it is the localization which is due to interference of many scattered wavelets. And for instance here, let's suppose I am in 1D, I have a potential like that, and let's suppose I consider a particle with an energy which is not bigger than typical large peaks. I will have obvious localization. The particle will bounce between peaks. This is not Anderson localization. This is trivial localization, okay? So if you think about it, what would be a nice Anderson localization would be a situation where you have a weak disorder like that, and then you have a particle with a large kinetic energy. You have a plane flying well over the mountains, but anyway, Because it is a wave, you have many scattered waves, and it will eventually be blocked. It will not travel. So this is what we would like to have. Okay? And coming from optics, an obvious image to understand that starts from Bragg diffraction. Bragg diffraction is what you have when you have a periodic modulation here with k vector, k here, period 2 pi over k. And it's well known that if you have a particle with a momentum h bar k divided by 2, if it tries to travel here, it's Bragg reflected the other way. But if it tried to go the other way, it's Bragg reflected. In other words, you have opened a gap corresponding to this momentum. Okay? And so this is a basic ingredient to understand, because here again, we have an energy which is much larger than the amplitude of this. But anyway, it cannot propagate because of an interference effect. Okay? And so now, if we think about the disorder potential, we think about the Fourier components of this potential. In a disorder potential, we have many sinusoidal components. And if there is a sinusoidal component to Bragg reflect all the p components of my particle trying to travel here, then this is how I understand Anderson localization. Okay? Now, let us go to the model, which is the beloved model of theorists. Non-correlated potential disorder, which means that it is a disorder made with delta peak. So the autocorrelation function is also a Dirac peak. Then the spectrum is a wide spectrum. So in a wide spectrum, there is indeed components to reflect all possible momentum. And so we understand localization with this model. But then what happens if you have a correlated potential, that is to say a potential with an autocorrelation function, with an autocorrelation function which is not a Dirac peak, but which has a certain width? This is what we have in the case of a speckle. Because in a speckle, we have a disorder which has a finite range of Fourier components. And the reason is very simple. You must remember that to produce this randomness here, you add light waves like that, and there is a maximum angle between the waves which are making an interference, which means that you cannot have details on your disorder which are smaller than a typical interference period between two light waves producing the disorder. If you are serious and you do seriously your calculation, you find that indeed the Fourier transform of the autocorrelation of this speckle, that is to say the spectrum of Fourier components of your disorder, has a cutoff here. So you have, in this disorder, you have Fourier components up to a certain point, which is a cutoff. And now we understand what happens if we try to localize matter waves in such a disorder. If we try to localize matter waves with an energy which is small enough to be below this cutoff, we are going to have localization. But if we try to localize matter waves with an energy which is beyond that cutoff, we are not going to have localization. And which means that, surprisingly enough, because we have considered a correlated disorder and not a delta peak, we have now an effective mobility edge. It turns out that although we are in one dimension, everything happens as if we add an effective mobility edge. This reasoning is a reasoning at first order, is Born approximation. And if you want to know what happens when we push the calculation beyond Born approximation, please ask me a question and I have a transparency to answer the question. So this, if you don't hear me, okay, ask a question about what's beyond. Later. I don't want to confuse everybody. So what we have is we have a phenomenon in which localization results from interference of many scattered wavelets. So it's not a trivial localization. It's a localization due to a quantum effect. And we have an effective mobility edge, so it's worth testing it. We embarked into such experiments 4 years ago now, and this is how the experiment is done. First, here, we make a one-dimensional situation by having a laser beam, which is well-focused. And now, you remember I told you about this optical dipole potential, and we tune below resonance, which means that the atoms are attracted towards the center of the laser beam. So the atoms are allowed to travel along this beam here. Okay. And now what we are going to do is to apply transversely to this freely circulating atom, we are going to apply transversely our speckle. And our speckle is highly anisotropic. We produce it with a very elongated plate like that, but very narrow in along the height, which means that here you can think of what you create as random disks. Okay, so the atoms can circulate in a tube, and you put randomly disks perpendicular to this tube. The atoms are confined, and basically they are in the ground state of this trapping tube. So for all practical purposes, it's really a one-dimensional problem. Here you have typical numbers, but okay. So what we are going to do now is we are going to start with atom confined in the center of the tube here, and it's a Bose-Einstein condensate. Don't make any mistake. The fact that it is a Bose-Einstein condensate will not entail any consequence in terms of superfluidity or something like that. Because what happens is that at time t equals zero, we release this Bose-Einstein condensate. And as soon as it begins to expand, the density is low enough that there is no more interaction. So we can think about it as many atoms described by the same wave function, but anyway independent. Just like the photon that I have in a laser beam. What is a laser beam? A laser beam is many photons in the same mode of the electromagnetic field. For me, the Bose-Einstein condensate, which is here, is nothing else than a kind of laser, but for atoms. I have many atoms described by the same wave function. What is the advantage? Is that in a single shot, I can look at the whole wave function. Because it's a wave function with many particles in it, although they do not interact. So the experiment is done in the following way. At time t equals zero, we release the longitudinally trapping potential, and this cloud expands. And if there is no disorder applied, you see that you have a ballistic expansion here. Okay? But when we did this experiment, when we applied the disorder, what we observed is that, so this is a ballistic expansion, and when you apply the disorder, we observed that the expansion was stopped. And at that time, we were first excited in saying, we have seen Anderson localization, but a careful analysis convinced us that it was not Anderson localization, and it could not have been Anderson localization for the following reason. In this situation, when we were in a situation of trivial localization, a situation where the peaks were high enough to block the propagation of the atoms. And when we analyzed seriously the situation, we understood what I have explained to you now, how we should work to have Anderson localization. In order to have Anderson localization, what you want to do is not to be in this situation, which was our situation at that time. What is this situation? It is a situation where the distribution of the momentum in the expanding cloud goes beyond the mobility edge. And so in this situation, it was not possible to observe Anderson localization. And when we analyze with our friends of Florence in the Ingusho's group their experiment, they had similar results, we found that they were exactly in the same situation as us. So what was the solution to observe real Anderson localization? The solution was first to push the effective mobility edge farther away. And for that, we needed to have a finer speckle. And it was a lot of work, more optical access in the vacuum chamber, etc. It's the kind of thing you do not do in a day or even in a month. It takes months and months. We had to change the device to have a much better optical access. And so now we had a correlation lengths for our speckle much smaller, which means that the effective mobility edge was farther. But this was not enough. It was not enough. Our atoms were still too fast. And what is the reason for the velocity of the atoms? When you have the initial Bose-Einstein condensate, there is some initial interaction energy. It's a chemical potential. And so the solution to have slower atom is to reduce the initial chemical potential. And to reduce it, the solution is just to reduce the number of atoms. But if you reduce the number of atoms, the signal becomes very weak. You can no longer observe them with the standard method. So we had also to develop a new method for observing the atoms, although the medium was very dilute. So another few months, and at the end, we reach a situation which was very satisfactory because the maximum value of the velocity was well below the mobility edge, and we could work deep in the weak disorder regime where the amplitude of the disorder is much lower than the kinetic energy of the particles, which is really the regime we were looking for. And when we tried the experiment, and the first time we tried the experiment, this is what we observed. And I would like to tell you, this is really a real experimental shot. It's a photograph of the square of the modulus of the localized wave function, and its particles, its atoms. So we observe directly the matter wave, okay? And this is what we have here. It's a beautiful profile. It indeed looks localized. But of course, we have done our homework seriously, so we plot this profile here, and we fit exponential on the wings, and clearly it looks exponential. And if, like me, you prefer the good all-day methods and you plot it in semi-log, you see that clearly it's really exponential. These wings are really exponential. So here we have an exponentially localized wave function. Of course, it's not enough to observe an exponential. You have to ask yourself, is the quantity I'm measuring here meaningful? Because here, of course, I can measure localization length. Is it meaningful? And for this, what we did is repeating the experiment and taking photographs at various times. And really, this impressed us very much. You have three plots here, three photographs, three profiles taken after 0.8 seconds, after 1 second, after 2 seconds, and you see they really come very well on top of each other. And the localization length that you measure after 0.5 seconds remains the same. So we think that the localization length we measure on this profile is really a very significant quantity. With this, what have we done? We have compared the result of this measurement to the simple theory that we have done. Because I remind you, it's just Born approximation. It's very simple to obtain. So we have a calculation allowing us to predict what is the localization length we are going to have. On the other hand, we measure it and we compare it. And here you have error bars for two sets of measurements. And I have put broad error on the theory. Why? Because I don't trust the theory? No. Because the theory depends on the amplitude of the disorder potential. And this depends on the light intensity in the center of the vacuum chamber. But I cannot go there and measure it. I have to measure it out of the vacuum chamber, and then I have to estimate it by some reasonable calculation. But you know, I'm not perfectly sure of all the parameters. So the band that you have here is the uncertainty on the theory due to the fact that the random potential has a certain uncertainty in its amplitude. With this, look how the results agree quite well. And I want to insist that there is absolutely no adjustable parameter here. You make a calculation. The calculation tells you that you should have a localization length of 1.8 millimeter. you measure it, it's 1.8 millimeter. I appreciated the comment that you should give ohms. Here, we give millimeter. We predict millimeters, we measure millimeters. No adjustable parameter. It's not within a scaling factor. Now that we had a much better experiment, we came again to the question, but what happens if we have a distribution of velocity, of momentum, going beyond this effective mobility edge? And of course, according to the reasoning that I have done, we come to the conclusion that atoms with a velocity larger than this effective mobility edge will just fly away. They will disappear. And then what we will have is localization of all the atoms with a velocity below this effective mobility edge. And to calculate what we are going to have, we must add many exponentials, including when you arrive at the effective mobility edge here, exponential with an infinite length of localization. And when you do your integral correctly, you find out that the result is an algebraic profile with a z to the minus 2 parolo. We did the experiment, and this is what we get. And the PhD students, when they came, they were very excited because they knew that it was interesting to go beyond the mobility edge, and they plot it in the semi-log plot, and they found that now it's not a straight line. And so we told them, why don't you plot it log-log? And when you plot it log-log, now it's straight line. And we asked them, what is the power law? And the coefficient was minus 1.96. And the students were not aware of the prediction of z to the minus 2. So when we told them, congratulations, because you are very close to minus 2, they were very happy, and we were happy also. So I must tell you that I'm very impressed by this. I'm very impressed by the fact that we can tell the difference between an exponential profile and an algebraic profile. And if you don't believe me, again, look at these plots. This here is log-log plot and clearly looks algebraic. And this log-log plot, clearly it does not look algebraic. And this is semi-log plot, and this is semi-log plot. And so you can really tell that this is a case of exponential profile, and this is a case of algebraic profile. So equipped with all that, we can say that already what we have done is that we have shown a very clear evidence of Anderson-like localization of bosons in one-dimensional speckle disorder potential. We have observed the crossover from the exponential regime to the algebraic regime of profiles when we cross this effective mobility edge. And we have quite good agreement with the perturbative ab initio calculations. And I must cite here an experiment with has been done in Florence in the group of Inguccio, and which was published in the same issue of Nature, which is related to this one, but different. What they do is they have a one-dimensional situation with a strong periodic lattice, and they add on top of it a weak periodic lattice with an incommensurate period. This is what is called as the Aubry-André model. It's related to Anderson localization, and they have done nice measurements on it, and you find it in Nature in the same issue as our paper. The real interesting part is here, but I am sorry I have not yet any result. The real interesting part is that now that we have demonstrated that the system is such a valuable system, what are we going to do? We are going to make more one-dimensional study, maybe with autocorrelation functions which are more complicated. We are going to add interaction in the problem. We are going to study situation in two dimension and in three dimension without and with interaction. And maybe at some point we will be able also to switch from boson to fermions. And as far as I understand, theorists do not have an answer for all these situations. And so if we can make an experiment, if we can perform an experiment before theorists can do the theory, we will be able to claim that we have realized a quantum simulator. And I'm sure that this will provoke cross-fertilization. And in the last 2 seconds, I want to show that this has been a work by a group. Here is the boss of the experimental group, Philippe Bouillet, the sub-boss of the experimental group, Vincent Josse, who is here, and the boss of the theory group. And of course, they are all in the atom optics group. And if you want to know who is the big boss, go on my webpage. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that beautiful talk. It's been a long afternoon, but I hope there are a few questions for him, as you should stay for that. And
I have a question. Yes, what happens beyond the Born approximation?
I'm not answering that at this time of day.
No, but I will answer. I have a I have a transparency for that. Okay. Can I?
You should perhaps take questions from other people rather than
okay.
yourself.
Just for curiosity, I don't know if you have investigated this or not, but does the size of the condensate affect delocalization?
So what?
The size of the
condensate? No, because the orders of magnitude are completely different. The initial size of the condensate is quite small compared to the localization length. This one point I can make here. You know that it's well known that a speckle is a self-averaging random process. And here we take advantage of it by the fact that the localization length that we are measuring are much larger than the correlation length of the speckle. So we have a hierarchy of length. You have the localization length, which is very big. You have the size of the condensate, which is a few tenths of micron, okay? And then you have the correlation length of the speckle, which is very narrow. So it doesn't affect anything.
Well, I have a question to ask.
Yes.
What happens beyond the Born condensate? I think
this is a very good question, and thank you to ask it. I appreciate it. Okay, let's go. Okay, it's here. Up, it's here. It's a very good question. And I have very good collaborators. Who have done the calculation, they have pushed the calculation to fourth order. And of course, when you go beyond Born approximation, there is something beyond what I call the effective mobility edge. And the way to understand it by end waving is the following. If you think that the speckle is done by light waves like this and a light wave like that, at lowest order, you can only have a kick from here and a kick from there. But when you go to higher orders, you can have several kicks. So you can stop atoms going faster. This is just hand waving. When you do seriously your homework, when they do, my students and my collaborators, what you find is indeed that here you have the Lyapunov exponent, that is to say the reciprocal, the inverse of the localization length. And you plot it versus the energy of the particle, which is labeled by a momentum P. And here we are in the case of weak disorder. It is a case that we have explored. And when you are in the case of weak disorder, you see that at the value of the effective mobility edge, there is a sudden drop of the Lyapunov coefficient. But it doesn't drop to minus infinity. This is a logarithmic scale. It drops by several orders of magnitude. So now I have again some localization. So beyond the effective mobility edge, there is still localization length. But this localization length is much larger than the size of my experiment. So if you think in terms of finite size system, it looks like a transition. But on the other hand, it's good news for the theorists who have demonstrated that there is always localization in one dimension. Yes, there is always localization. It's here, you know. But the localization length is so large that as an experimentalist, I don't care. So I think we all agree, we understand what's happening. And I would like to support the claim that you made. it was good that I did not know well about all this and about the theorem that everything is localized in one dimension when we embark in the subject, because maybe I would not have embarked in the subject. But I did not know that everything was localized. I had only done the calculation in the Bohm approximation, and I thought that, you know, there was this, but now we understand. And what you see is that when the amplitude of the disorder increases, going here, then rather than being a sharp crossover, it becomes a smooth crossover. So I think we understand everything.
I think that is, in fact, roughly what I used to know 30 years ago. But that may just be wishful thinking and reconstruction of the past on my part. Are there any other quick questions? Because if not, I wanted to say thank you to the people who have organized this.
Yes.
Thank you for the audience for lasting out to the end of the long fourth day of this meeting. Thank you to all the speakers who've made a very good job of this. Particularly, thank you to Phil, who's given us so much fun for the last 50 years, or the last 40 years we paid any attention to this work, and we're always paying attention to something that he's been doing.
He wants to say something.
You want to say something, Phil?
Thanks to all the speakers. Thanks to all the speakers. I enjoyed every one of the talks and learned something new, I think, from every one of the talks. If only that I was injudicious in my notes in the old days. And I'm not much more judicious now. In fact, maybe I'm more of a curmudgeon rather than less. But I enjoyed every one of the talks. And I particularly want to thank Gloria and David for putting this thing together, which has been so enjoyable for me.